You're listening to Past and Present, the Colonial Williamsburg podcast. Hi, welcome to the podcast. I'm Harmony Hunter. My guest today is John Broadwater, who is the chief archaeologist at the Office of National Marine Sanctuaries with NOAA. John, thank you for being here today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I hardly know where to start, but you are an underwater archaeologist, and
right.
I think few people can claim to have been as close to an artifact from the Battle of Yorktown as you have been. You've had your hands on a ship which sank during that battle.
Yes, and it's really exciting for me. Underwater archaeology is such a rare little subdiscipline of archaeology, but we really do get a chance to see some types of artifacts that don't generally survive on terrestrial sites. As a result, one of the Colonial Williamsburg archaeologists once referred to us as our submersible colleagues. So underwater archaeology, we really do try to apply the same principles and techniques of archaeology. It's just that our sites happen to be underwater.
We should say the story is, and why we're interested here at Colonial Williamsburg in your particular branch of archaeology, is that up at Yorktown, there are a whole bunch of 18th century ships underwater. How did they come to be there?
It was all part of the American Revolution, so it does tie in with Colonial Williamsburg quite closely. General Clinton, who was in charge of all British forces in America at the time, whose headquarters was up in New York, he ordered Cornwallis to move up into the Chesapeake region, and they were going to try to ride out the winter of 1781-82 in the Chesapeake region because it would be a good ice-free port. When Cornwallis got here in July of 1781, There were opportunities to establish his headquarters down in the Norfolk region, but he eventually chose Yorktown because some of his criteria included to find an area that could be easily defended, but that had direct sea access for the ships, and had consequently had deep water for an anchorage. And as you know, Hampton Roads is pretty shallow in a lot of places, and it turned out Yorktown was almost the ideal place. The constriction between Yorktown and Gloucester Point made it easy for them to set up cannons on both sides of the river so they can control passage up and down the river. The York River around Yorktown is one of the deepest natural river channels. It never has to be dredged. It maintains its own depth there around Yorktown of around 100 feet out in the deepest part of the channel. So that's how they came to be there.
The Siege of Yorktown ends up being the last major battle of the American Revolution. It's the deciding battle. Cornwallis is cornered in there, but he doesn't give up.
It's kind of fun to step away from the battle a step or two and just look at this whole scene. Let's try Cornwallis's point of view. He's there on the bluffs at Yorktown. It's a beautiful, easily defended harbor, and yet now all of a sudden these very large French warships are challenging. They're visible. I mean, they're sitting there literally within sight of Cornwallis and his troops. Now he realizes that instead of having a safe encampment that can be defended against any possible attack from land, he's got to defend his back door as well, because his warships are very small. They're no match at all for the large ships that the French have brought in. The rest of his ships are transports. They're not warships. So he's got a second front now to where he's being challenged actively. And he doesn't realize yet that this huge siege that Washington is planning with the land troops is really in effect. So what he does is he takes some of his merchant ships, and probably he would have chosen ones that had mostly been offloaded where they've taken the supplies and cargo out. He lined them up in shallow water right along the what's now the public beach at Yorktown and purposely sank them. He scuttled them and formed a line that was called the sinking line in one of the log books. And it was just a line of ships that were sunk basically end to end. And the idea was that these ships whose masts were still sticking out of the water, and some of the decks were just awash, so they could actually station troops on these ships' decks. but it was going to be a very effective obstacle against any sort of amphibious landing by French troops. So now he thinks he's protected. But on the night of October 10th, the French and American forces have moved into the area and set up their initial cannon emplacements, and they start firing on Cornwallis's position. But interestingly, for the naval aspects of this whole thing, the first targets were not Cornwallis's troops, who were still very actively digging in along the shore, but the ships out in the river. And unfortunately for Cornwallis, one of the first casualties of the siege of Yorktown was his largest warship, HMS Caron. And the French were using a tactic that was fairly common, but very devious and not so nice. The French had little portable ovens that they could heat the cannonballs until they were red hot. And firing those at a ship that's covered with tar and rigging and sails and are just bombs waiting to go off, this was a very effective technique. And sure enough, they landed several of these red-hot cannonballs on the Caron.